Hello, hello, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 18 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we have a very special guest for you guys today who we'll be getting to in a little bit. And I'm excited about this guest. I think you guys are going to be excited to hear from him. I think he really captured the attention of Rangers fans during the World Junior Classic, and that would be Brett Berard, a 2020 draft pick for the New York Rangers. He was selected in the fifth round, and this is a guy that I think a lot of people who I've spoken to feel like was a great value pick for the Rangers, and then to see him come out and perform the way that he did in the World Juniors, I know was a really exciting thing for a lot of fans. And Brett's a really good kid. I've had a chance to talk to him before, kind of a fun interview. So I wanted to have him on this week. I think you guys will be really interested in getting to know him a little bit better. But first, we're going to have to wait a little while before we get to that because there is a topic that we need to address. And we're going to dive right into the story that everybody has been talking about this week. I'm going to pretty much devote this whole first segment to this. And then, you know, we'll move on to Brett and we'll get to your Twitter questions in the final segment of the program. But of course, there's no other place to start other than talking about Tony DeAngelo, who, in a shocking turn of events, was waived by the New York Rangers on Sunday. And now we know with certainty, based on what we heard from General Manager Jeff Gorton, Team President John Davidson on Monday night before the Rangers game against the Penguins, that Tony has indeed played his final game with the Rangers. He will not be in uniform for them again. Gorton made that crystal clear. And, you know, now they're working on moving on. There's a lot of layers to this, And I really want to dive into all of it. I basically have been immersed in this for the last couple days, and really even beyond that. I kind of want to start early in January. Some of you may remember that I wrote a story about the Rangers growing increasingly frustrated with Tony. This was after the incident in which he, you know, stormed off on Twitter, essentially quit Twitter, made a big stink about going to Parler. The Rangers got a lot of questions about it. I wrote about it at the time because I had felt around a little bit and was getting this increasing sense that the Rangers were fed up with things, that the Rangers were feeling like, why does he keep drawing this negative attention? Why can't he just kind of not keep quiet, but why can't he avoid controversy, if you will? So I got a lot of pushback on that story. Some mistakenly thought it was politically motivated, which I repeatedly tried to explain it had absolutely nothing to do with, and I will stand by that. I just knew that the Rangers were getting frustrated. I knew that his missteps and the unnecessary attention that he seemed to constantly draw was something that they were taking issue with increasingly. So that's why I wrote that story. I was basically just trying to report on the why and the how. You know, I went over a lot of the things that had happened, especially since the pandemic hit, when Tony's social media behavior seemed to kind of jump up a little bit. Everybody was home. People didn't have as much to do. Like a lot of people that are in their mid-20s, Tony was spending his time scrolling quite a bit, and we know that he likes to offer his opinions. That's something that I wrote about in 2019 when, you know, we weren't in the middle of a pandemic, and I just noticed that he was constantly debating fans, arguing with fans, antagonizing fans, offering his opinions. So we know that this is something that Tony likes to do. But I think once the pandemic hit and tensions started to rise in all different kinds of ways and the politics became more polarizing and all that, that Tony was drawing more attention. And it wasn't the politics that the Rangers took issue with. It was the other stuff. It was the fighting with fans. It was the making light of COVID. It was the things like that. So at the time I wrote this story at the beginning of January, I got the sense that the Rangers were increasingly motivated to, if not move on from him soon, then at the very least his stay in New York might not be long because they were having to constantly do damage control and they weren't happy about it. I know for a fact that they had multiple conversations with him about this. So that is what led to me writing this story. At the time, it was right after the Parler thing, right after the storming of the Capitol, and I want to weigh in on all that. With all that being said, even though I knew that there was some stuff going on behind the scenes and that they weren't thrilled with his behavior, I was completely shocked when he got waived on Sunday. Many of you probably know, I had tweeted earlier that day, having no idea that this was coming, that I was moving on Sunday. Sunday was the 31st, the last day of the month. I hadn't taken a day off really since training camp began. I hadn't missed a single Zoom with anybody from the Rangers. And of course, in the back of my mind when the day began, I'm thinking, what if they make a lineup change today? Maybe today's the day they finally put Mika on the same line with Panarin. Oh, even worse, like what if they make a trade or something? You know, I had my brother coming in, my dad coming in. I live in a fifth floor apartment in New York City, which anybody who lives in New York City knows it's not easy to get your stuff out of a place like that. So I had these thoughts in my mind in the beginning of the day, but I did not at all think that Tony being waived was what was going to come. And then, of course, as I'm trying to get stuff done and, you know, trying to get it done as quickly as possible because I have people there helping me and I don't want to take their time all day, my phone is buzzing, 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 and we get the news about Tony. So as I got a chance to digest it, as I got a chance to finally start texting and scrolling and gathering more information, and now in the days that have come since, talking to more people, hearing from Gorton and Davidson, here's what we know. We know that Tony was already having a rough month when he reacted harshly to a penalty on opening night and got hit with that unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. We know that David Quinn wasn't happy with it. We know that David Quinn decided to bench him for the next game. And as I mentioned, Tony was having already not so great of a month because of this parlor controversy. So tensions were a little bit high. Maybe, you know, it's hard to say with any certainty, but maybe that played into him not reacting properly, the fact that he had been dealing with criticism for the days leading into that opening game. Maybe not, who knows. But the Rangers felt like it was an undisciplined penalty, and he gets benched for a game, ends up being two games because the Rangers played so well in that second game. Quinn was very clear that he only intended to bench him for one game. But what's come to light in recent days is that Tony did not take that well. We don't know exactly what went on behind the scenes, but we know whether, you know, you want to say he pouted or maybe there were arguments or anything like that. We know that it was a volatile situation. We know that it reached a point where whatever kind of stink he was making led to an ultimatum from Jeff Gorton. The quote from Jeff Gorton was that he took Tony aside and he said, "No more issues. If your name is in anything at all that we have to hear, we're going to move on." So Gorton threatened to waive Tony if he didn't get his act together. So we know that there was this buildup, right? There was this buildup of everything that went on in the offseason. And I know the Rangers aren't making that the point of emphasis here. Obviously, the point of emphasis was him reacting poorly to the benching and then him getting into an altercation with Alexander Georgiev, as was first reported by The Athletic. But clearly, the Rangers had reached a breaking point with him. Now, I feel that Gorton, when he made that ultimatum, when he made that threat, probably thought that, or was at least hoping, that that would be a wake-up call, that that would maybe get Tony to walk the straight and narrow for a little while. It didn't last very much time at all, because by Saturday night, we know about the altercation with Alexander Georgiev. You know, a lot of this stuff is like, he said, she said, well, there's been so many rumors flying around. This is kind of the danger of social media in a situation like this, is one person says something that they heard through some grapevine and then it kind of takes on legs of its own. But what we do know with fair certainty, based on reporting of others, you know, Rick Carpinello, our buddy from The Athletic, was the first guy to jump on this story. And then I asked about it and several others asked about it, is that Tony and Alex Georgiev were both on the ice for that overtime winning goal from Sidney Crosby. There was that miscommunication behind the net when they had a chance to clear the puck, and because they weren't on the same page in that moment, they didn't clear the puck successfully, and then moments later, Crosby gets the winning goal. It sounds like what happened was, on the way into the locker room, Tony said something, whether it was sarcastic, whether it was, you know, a little more mean-spirited than that, whatever it was, something that did not sit well with Georgiev. Heat of the moment, Georgiev is a fierce, fierce competitor. He's a quiet guy, but he's a fierce competitor. And Tony, we know, is also a temperamental guy. Heat of the moment, those two get into it. It sounds like Georgiev threw the first punch, possibly, and it gets broken up. There's been a bunch of different rumors about who broke it up. I don't even really see why that's not a huge deal. To me, that's not like a big thing. This was a moment, a heated moment in a volatile situation. Tony had had a rough month. Tony had been the subject of criticism. Tony had gotten benched. Tony had had behind-the-scenes disagreements. Tony had had this conversation with Gorton. Tony was not playing well, and it reached a breaking point. So that was the final straw. And Gordon said that he would waive him if there was another incident, and he was true to his word. He did what he said he was going to do. So from my standpoint, I think this was a pretty iron-fisted move. They had just signed this guy to a two-year, $9.6 million contract, and they put him on waivers after he had only played six games into the new contract. They knew, Gorton had to know, that waiving him would bring on this firestorm of questions and kill his trade value, but he did it anyway. So in my mind, while there are ways you can criticize the organization, and I'll touch on that in just a moment, there is a little bit of credit deserved here for acting decisively, because this was not the most prudent move for the Rangers. This is a talented player, put up 53 points for you last year. You felt he was worthy of this contract, and then he only plays six games into that new contract. And because you feel like he's become a distraction, because you feel like he's become a problem, you put your foot down and send a pretty stern message by doing this. And now you're going to have to figure out how to get rid of him. You're going to probably end up eating some money. No matter what the solution is here, it's not going to be a good one for the Rangers. So I believe that a little bit of credit is deserved for acting so decisively. Now, where the criticism may be warranted, and this is a question that I brought up, others have brought up, it came up in the press conference yesterday, is the decision to sign him in the first place. Was that a good decision? Clearly the answer is no. And then even further back, if you want to look at it, trading for him in the first place, was that a good decision? I mean, they got a good year out of him last year, but now you know, at this point, you would probably say that it was more trouble than it was worth. Gorton was asked pointedly during the press conference last night how much they researched Tony's past. And this is an important part of this, is Tony was suspended when he was in the OHL for violating the harassment, abuse, and diversity policy. There's a lot of rumors about what exactly he said. I've asked around about this even way before any of this happened. And, you know, we've heard it was racial. We've heard it was homophobic. I don't know for sure what he said that got him into trouble in the OHL, but we know that he crossed the line. He said something that he shouldn't have said more than once and got himself into trouble. He's had the reputation, especially when he was a teenager, of being a bit of a loose cannon, being a guy who said things that he shouldn't say, and a guy who got himself into trouble. The Rangers knew this, right? I don't doubt that they did their homework and knew all this. Everybody knew about this at the time that they acquired him. But ultimately, they decided to take a calculated risk. The unfortunate reality of this is that it happens all the time in sports. It's not a unique thing to the Rangers. Talented players who have displayed questionable behavior get second, third, fourth chances all the time in sports. The more talented they are, the longer the leash. Now, does that make it right? Of course not. Does that mean the Rangers shouldn't or don't deserve to shoulder some of the blame? Of course they do. And do I believe that all teams should put more stock into character? Absolutely. So there are deeper issues here that you know, you can criticize the Rangers for, and that is fair. But ultimately, we live in a world where the best of the best are going to get chances to perform in any profession, not just sports. And how you handle those opportunities is on you, right? Tony was given the chance to play for the Rangers, had a great season last year, or a very good season. Great might be a stretch, but a very good season, and got rewarded with a contract, and then showed an inability to control himself. Davidson put it, I believe the way he said it was, stay out of his own way. He could not stay out of his own way. He could not behave properly. He could not represent the organization properly. He could not avoid behind-the-scenes conflicts, all this stuff. So he brought this on himself. The responsibility lies on him more than anybody else. The Rangers absolutely should answer questions about why they took the risk on him, why they traded him, why they signed him. But them taking a calculated risk on a player who had a little bit of a checkered past, or more than a little bit, whatever you want to call it, that's not a huge surprise. It's an unfortunate reality. It happens all the time. It's not going to be all the best, most moral, ethical people that exist in the sporting world. The Rangers decided that they were willing to roll the dice. It was a bad decision on their part. There's no question about that. But nobody deserves more blame in this than Tony himself. I want that to be crystal, crystal clear. His penchant for disciplinary problems with the team and poor judgment on social media has done permanent damage to his reputation, and he alone is the one to blame for that. The Rangers wouldn't be making this move otherwise. And I know that some people took issue with them not being more upfront about that at the press conference, but I would counter by asking, you know, what did you expect? They weren't going to make inflammatory remarks that would draw even more negative attention to D'Angelo and hence the organization and continue to serve as a distraction for a team that had lost 5 out of 6 before Monday's very, very much needed win. We haven't even talked about that yet. Maybe we will in the second half of the program, but the Rangers, it didn't surprise me at all that that was the way that they attacked the press conference. They are clearly trying to downplay this to some degree, although they did hold a press conference with the team president and GM, so clearly they were trying to tackle it head on, but also do some damage control at the same time, and not to mention the fact that they're actively trying to convince another team to take a chance on him. That's a clear factor here that I'm sure a lot of you are aware of. So to me, the actions speak louder than the words. In this case, they've made their position crystal clear by cutting him. They're cutting him off. They're waiving him. They're done with him. They're going to have to eat money. They made a difficult decision business-wise in order to be done with him. So that tells you how they feel about his actions more than what they might say at a press conference, right? And other teams know this too. So this is like, it's not like we're revealing any big secrets here. Regardless of what they said, this is clearly based on a pattern of behavior. It's not just his reaction to the benching. It's not just the fight with Georgiev. I get that it feels disingenuous to talk about how well-liked he was. I'm sure some of you would have liked to hear them bash him and give all these juicy details and call him a bad dude. But if you were expecting that, I think you were looking in the wrong place. There was no chance that that was going to happen. As far as the character of the man, and that's really what a lot of this comes down to, I think the truth lies somewhere between, probably leaning more to one way than the other, but somewhere between the predominant narratives. He certainly wasn't universally loved by his teammates and those who are around the team, but I definitely know that he was close to some. I also know that he wasn't running around the locker room offending everybody and fighting everybody. And this, you know, he wasn't, especially at the time that I had locker room access prior to the pandemic, I did not sense any overt, obvious, visible problems. You know, I knew that his social media use caught some attention, but I also think at the time what he was doing wasn't as controversial as it was once he started tweeting about COVID and challenging fans to fights and making a big stink about Parler and all this other stuff. So what I observed last year was that he did have some really close friends on the team. He was a vocal guy that made a lot of guys laugh. And, you know, the Rangers had him do that social media show. And, you know, I think he was pretty much accepted by everybody. I'm sure some people in their own minds maybe thought he was a little much. I'm sure some people didn't agree with his politics. But I also know that he had a lot of really close friends on the team. I think a lot of you are aware that he's really close with Ryan Strome, very friendly with Brendan Lemieux, very friendly with Adam Fox, a handful of others. And even guys like Mark Stahl, I know he was really close with. I think Mark Stahl, that should probably be mentioned a little bit. Mark Stahl had a really positive influence on Tony. And not having him around, I don't want to overblow it and make it like it was this huge deal. But I do think that he missed him for sure this year, especially on the ice. He did not have any consistent kind of partner, and he had that with Mark Stahl for a long time. And I'm sure that affected his on-ice play to some degree, but obviously this move had very little, if nothing at all, to do with his on-ice play. Now, it's harder for me to say if the relationship with his teammates changed much this season. I mean, first off, we're only how many weeks into the season? The team hasn't been together all that long. Training camp started about a month ago. But also for me, from a reporter's standpoint, we don't have access to the locker room right now. So I'm not seeing those day-to-day interactions with his teammates. I'm not getting to talk to him or his teammates face-to-face in person. It's only over Zooms with a handful of other reporters in there, and it's way, way less personal. So it's harder to tell if his more recent actions had infiltrated the locker room and had made things awkward or caused any tension or anything like that. Clearly, if we're talking about the character of the guy, he's got immaturity issues, he's got self-control issues, he's got some controversial opinions, there's no doubt about that. Maybe, we can only hope, this will finally get him to wake up and grow up. Maybe it won't, but personally I'm hoping for the former. I totally get there are a lot of you who have been offended by him, don't think he deserves another chance, but I'm not even talking about hockey. I mentioned this at the end of my column the other day. In life, as a human being, I sincerely hope that Tony finds a way to better himself. Because if we're not hoping for that, what are we really hoping for? If people are out there just rooting for him to fail because you think he's a terrible person and deserves to be shamed for the rest of his life, I'm not on the same page with that, okay? I totally agree that he has put his foot in his mouth. I totally agree that he has done some things that are offensive, done some things that are off-putting. Clearly, the OHL things, whatever was said, their behavior issues there. So I agree on all those points. Trust me, I've gotten some pushback on things that I've written about him in the past because people thought, including people close to Tony, thought that I was being too critical of him. So I have no problem criticizing his actions. But what I'm saying is, as a human being, as a man, I hope that he can find a way to come out of this and be a better person. So I would hope all of you would think the same thing. I think most of you probably do. The final question here, before we finally move on and get to Brett, is what do the Rangers do from here? I wrote a story on Monday, the days are blurring together, but Monday I believe it was, where I laid out what I see as the two primary options. So if you want a little more details on this, go check it out at lohud.com/sports/Rangers. You can also find my column on Tony there. But basically, there's two ways that the Rangers are going to try to go here. They are not going to try to terminate the contract. I had heard that even before the press conference yesterday, and then Jeff Gorton reiterated it. It sounds like a good idea, right? But as far as the legal processes go, from what I understand, it would be really hard for the Rangers to win that battle, so they're not going to go down that path. So what Gorton's preference seems to be, and what he mentioned at the press conference yesterday, is he would like to trade him. He would like to find him another team. Now, you might say, well, he just passed through waivers. Any team could have picked him up without having to give up anything, and nobody did. And that's a fair point. But remember this, to pick him up on waivers, any team would have had to pick up his complete contract, meaning the equivalent of $4.8 million for the rest of this season and a $4.8 million hit next season. A lot of teams are in a tight, tight cap spot right now. So it's not surprising. There were really only a handful of teams that could have even considered it. So it's not surprising that he didn't get picked up. I fully did not expect him to get claimed on waivers. I originally thought the trade was a long shot. Gorton made it pretty clear at the press conference the other night that that is his preference, to pull off a trade. But, you know, for some of the reasons that we've already gone over already, the baggage that comes with D'Angelo, the fact that he didn't get claimed on waivers, etc., it seemed to me like it might be tough to find a team that would be willing to take that on, deal with the PR mess, et cetera, et cetera. But we saw on Tuesday night, Darren Dreger reported that he spoke to D'Angelo's agent. And of course, coming from an agent, you know, it's obviously a noteworthy source, but you have to take it with a little bit of grain of salt because the agent wants to find his player, a team to play for. But he reported, meaning Dreger, that there are, I think he said a ton, or he used some term that indicated there are quite a few teams that are actually interested in calling the Rangers to potentially make a trade. Now, I've checked in on this. I have heard that there is a fair amount of interest, but the disclaimer is the Rangers are really going to have to take their medicine if they want to make it happen. It sounds like a lot of the teams that are reaching out to the Rangers want them to take a bad contract in return. And at that point, you have to ask, is it worth it? And I'll get into the other option for the Rangers in just a moment, which on the surface to me might make more sense. I understand that the Rangers want to get this taken care of as quickly as possible. They don't want this to drag out into the summer. I totally get all that. They want to give Tony a chance to move on. But the hurdles right now are that the Rangers are likely going to have to either eat some of D'Angelo's salary, maybe even attach an asset to him, who knows, and probably not get much in return, and or they're going to have to take a bad contract in return, another team's problem, essentially. And then do you want to get stuck in that position either, especially considering the fact that we know it's likely to be a flat $81.5 million cap for a couple more seasons. The trade, I think, is more likely than not to happen. I can't tell you which team right now. I think it's a little bit early in the process, but I did check in today and was told there's been a fair amount of interest. But if that doesn't work out, and if I were in Gorton's seat, which clearly I'm not, I'm very unqualified for that position, but if I was in that seat, I would give some consideration, at least, to the buyout option, which is to say, we know the Rangers sent D'Angelo home right now. He's on their taxi squad, but he will not be participating in anything with the team for the rest of the season. By doing that, they temporarily save themselves a little over $1 million on the cap. They're still paying him the full salary, and they're still taking a salary cap hit of roughly $3.7 million, but it's less than the $4.8 million. So they are saving a little bit of money in the cap by having him home. And then once they get to the summer, the buyout option is pretty appealing. This is not, I know people think it's bad business, and I do too. And I know people are sick of the Rangers using the buyout option all the time, but this is not the same thing that it was when the Rangers bought out a guy like Henrik Lundqvist or bought out a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk. Because D'Angelo is a young player, the buyout penalties are much less significant than we've seen in the past. For next season, it would be under $400,000. It would be like $300,000-something would be the cap hit. And for the season after that, it would be under $900,000 in the 860, something like that range. You know, it's still money that you'd like to have, but you're only talking under $500,000 for next season and under $1 million for the season after. That's very manageable if you compare it to the type of buyout hits that the Rangers had to deal with in the case of Shattenkirk and Lundqvist. So, you know, rather than taking on a bad contract from another team that could be on your books for a couple more years, or even rather maybe than paying $2.4 million or whatever another team would ask you to pay per season to retain half of D'Angelo's salary, I think the buyout option makes sense. I think it's pretty clear, based on what I've heard, based on what Gorton said, based on what Drager is reporting, that the Rangers are going to pursue the trade option. But I don't think it's a bad fallback option for them to consider the buyout thing and wait till the summer. It's not a great situation for D'Angelo, but he put himself in this position, as we talked about, and the Rangers made this decision to waive him. So, you know, making him wait it out to the summer, I think that's a fallback option if they don't like what they're hearing from other teams. So with that, we've kind of digested all these different layers of this story. I feel like I could even go on talking about it for longer than this, but I want to move on at this point. I want to get into some hockey talk. I might answer one D'Angelo question in the Twitter segment, but I'm going to make sure that we mostly stick to hockey there. And I'm definitely going to stick to hockey with our guest. So without further ado, let's get to our interview with Brett. Now let's welcome into the show a very special guest, a prospect that got Rangers fans really excited with what he was doing at the World Juniors. And that, of course, is Brett Berard coming to us from Providence. Brett, thanks for joining us. How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I appreciate you carving out the time. I know you got practice coming up, so we'll try not to keep you for too long. But I want to start with the World Juniors stuff because that's obviously, I'm sure, one of the most exciting moments of your career. Did you feel the love from the Rangers fans? Because I have to tell you, every night that Team USA was playing, I was getting tweets and emails. I mean, people were really hyped to watch you play. So did you feel that from the Rangers fans, that they were kind of keeping a close eye on you during that?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty hard to stay off social media, but I tried to stay off as much as I could. But whenever I was on Twitter or something, my name would pop up here and there. So it was pretty cool to see, especially from a fan base that is one of the best in the league, if not the best. So it was definitely really cool, especially being just drafted this past year and already getting that much love. I feel like that's really cool and something that means a lot to me for sure.
I think what it seems like they like about your game, New Yorkers love the hustle. They love guys that play hard, give it their all. I know when we've talked before, you told me you take a lot of pride in that, but did you feel like that's something you were really able to put on display with your game at the World Juniors?
Yeah, I feel like at World Juniors, I was trying to go out there and make a name for myself and try to prove who I am as a player. And I think a big identity of me as a player is kind of my speed and my feistiness, even though I might be a little smaller. But I feel like that's something that I definitely take pride in. That's what I tried to do at World Juniors. And I mean, it paid off. So it worked. And that's definitely how I'm going to keep playing. So, I mean, that's just my game. And that's who I am as a player. So, that's just how I play.
So going into it, I'd spoken to a handful of people about you and other Rangers prospects as well who were involved in that tournament. There were quite a few of you. And it didn't sound like you were necessarily guaranteed a spot on the team. I know you still have another year of eligibility next year, so you should presumably be on the team again next year. But what was the whole camp experience like? How competitive was it? I mean, did you go in there knowing that you were going to have a strong showing to make that team and have a spot?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I wasn't nobody was really guaranteed anything, but especially for me, I was kind of like an outside guy, and I was just, again, I was just, wasn't going out there trying to make the team, trying to do too much. I was trying to go out there and just, like you said, I have another year of eligibility, so it was good to be out there and just try to go out there and kind of set myself up for the next year. But I mean, yeah, I had a good camp, and it was really cool and fun playing against all the top players in the world at 01 and 02 birth year. So that was really fun, and I think it really made me a better hockey player in that month and a half that we had together. But yeah, like you said, I wasn't guaranteed anything. I just tried to go out there and just play my game, and yeah, it worked out. So I couldn't be more grateful for that.
So you're a bottom six guy on the team. Was your job kind of not, I don't know if you would say be an agitator, but be a guy who brought a lot of energy? Was that something that the coaching staff emphasized with you?
I mean, yeah, for sure. Like, you got the Zegerses, the Kaliyevs, Boldy, Turkos. So, I mean, those are the top guys on our team. So I didn't try to do too much. And like you said, I just tried to play my role and kind of give the team energy whenever we were down. If we let up a goal or something, I go out there and try to get the momentum back. I think that's something that I definitely took pride in the tournament, and something that that I tried to give my team. I tried to give them a different kind of aspect of the team, and that was playing the energy role, like you said. So that's something that I definitely took pride in, and I mean, it was pretty fun to play that way too. So yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, you like playing that way, don't you? You can tell.
Yeah, I love playing that way. It's fun. I mean, just playing hockey is fun, but playing that way and getting your opponents mad, it's pretty funny too sometimes.
So, did your confidence sort of build as the tournament went on, or were you confident from the get-go? It looked like you were playing with David Quinn, the Rangers coach, always called it swagger, but it looked like you were playing with that swagger. Did that kind of build for you throughout the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, as a hockey player, you kind of have to be confident in yourself, or else you're really going to do nothing. So, I mean, I'm confident in myself as a player, and I know what I can do. So, but as the tournament went on, yeah, like you said, we kept winning games. I had some success too, so that definitely boosted my confidence, especially being on a world stage like that. It's something I always dreamed of playing in that tournament. So, to have the success that I did, and kind of to play the way I did, definitely boosted my confidence, and definitely helps me back here at school too.
Did you have what you felt like was maybe a standout game performance moment, anything even leading up to, just in the qualifying rounds and all that? Did you have anything where you felt like, okay, I'm showing I belong here?
I feel like every game I tried to do something different that tried to show that I belonged at that level. But I think a specific game for me would probably be the Austria game. I thought I played really well. I played a decent amount too. And then obviously I scored my first goal there. So you dream of playing in the tournament, never mind scoring a goal at the World Junior. So that was pretty cool, and it was a really special moment for me that I'll have to remember forever. But it was definitely that game where I kind of realized that, like, I belong here. And I mean, yeah, it was definitely boosted my confidence too, and I think that helped me through the rest of the tournament.
The video of that goal blew up. That was like all over my Twitter feed that night. So that must have been pretty cool for you.
I just picked up the puck and just tried to take it to the net, and good things happen when you bring it to the net. So
So let's talk about the gold game. What are your most vivid memories of that? Like, I'm sure it was an amazing experience, but what, when you look back on it now, jumps out in your mind is what was most special about that night?
I don't know, it's kind of all blur now, but I've watched the highlights a couple of times now, but I just remember being the last 10 minutes is probably the last 10 minutes of my life. It felt like a whole game could play in that last 10 minutes. But I was definitely a little nervous going into the third, up to nothing. But I mean, we had a great team, so I had a feeling we were going to get it done. And I mean, yeah, I just remember hugging everybody, all the guys, and definitely getting that medal at the end was something that it was a really special moment. I remember getting goosebumps, and then obviously screaming the national anthem at the end with all the guys. That was something that you always watch on TV growing up, and it was really cool to be a part of.
Before that game, obviously going into the tournament, everybody was talking about Canada as the favorite. But before that game, I saw an interview with Zegras, and he seemed really confident. Like, we feel like nobody's really taking it to these guys, and that's what we're going to do tonight. And then you guys did it. So was that really a prevalent feeling in the locker room going into that game, that even though they had all these first round picks and all that kind of stuff, that you guys were the better team, that you guys were kind of a better overall unit?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Canada had an unreal team there. Like you said, they had maybe 20 first rounders. So I mean, they were a special team for sure. But I think our team, as the tournament went on, we just kept getting closer to each other. We kept growing a stronger bond within our team. And I think finally, when we got to that gold medal game, it's like we've been together for years now, but we were only together for 3, 4 weeks. So, I mean, yeah, we were confident in our team. We really liked our team a lot. And we knew that if we went out and played to our team identity and played the way that we did in that gold medal game, that we were going to be able to get it done. So, I mean, that's what we did. And it was, we got it done. So.
So now you're back at Providence. I guess your feet have kind of hit the ground, but you're a freshman, so I'm sure you're still getting used to all the, you know, everything that goes on with college hockey. How's that going for you now?
Yeah, it's really fun. I mean, I only live 15 minutes from here, so it was always a dream of mine to come to this school, and being close to home after being away at the NTDP in Michigan for the past 2 years, and kind of being away from friends and family for those 2 years, it's good to be back home. And I mean, I try to go home and see my parents and stuff whenever I can, but being at this school, I committed pretty early too. So finally that I'm here, it's pretty special. And I mean, just trying to do whatever I can to help my team here and try to take it all in.
So when we spoke last time, you know, everybody I talked to about you talked about the skill, talked about the hustle, the forecheck, all that kind of stuff. But the size thing gets brought up all the time. I mentioned it to you last time and kind of asked you if you're sick of that. So for the fans though, that haven't kind of heard you talk about that, you know, how much has that kind of stuck with you your whole life, and how much does that put a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, and how do you overcome it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you always see stuff that maybe I could be too small or too light to play at a high level, but I like to use my size as my advantage. Actually, just being small, I feel like I can slip away from my opponents in the corners easier. And I think I'm pretty fast. So I think my speed can hurt the opponent sometimes. And I just feel like being small, I can be elusive and kind of silky. So I definitely use it to my size. I may not be the biggest and strongest guy, but I definitely use my size to my advantage for sure.
So what do you see as your development path in the next few years? Obviously, you know, you're focused on school right now, but you want to prepare yourself to eventually make the jump and become a pro. So what do you feel like are the most important things for you in the next few years to get ready for that?
Yeah, I think the most important things are a couple of things is definitely gaining some more weight. I think if you have to be at that level, you got to, especially at the size that I am, I got to be pretty built. So I think that's something. My speed, obviously, I've been really working on my first couple steps, like in my explosiveness in those steps. So I've definitely been working that. And then I think my shot, I think being a smaller guy, whenever you get the chance to shoot, you want to put it in the back of the net. So I think those three things are definitely something I'll be working on here at school to prepare me for the next level.
All right. I want to have a little bit of fun here at the end. First thing, I'm sure you get asked about this all the time, but for the fans that might not know, your dad is a college coach. Yeah. Holy Cross, right?
Correct.
So, you know, I think I had asked you about this last time, but like, was it an awkward dinner conversation when you told him that you weren't going to go play for his team and you were going to play for Providence?
I mean, it was a little awkward, but my dad and my mom both came to Providence. And so I guess they understood because they went through the same thing. My dad was a goalie here on the hockey team. My mom was a field hockey player. So they both had to make their decisions back in the day, and they both picked Providence for a reason. So I think when I told them that I was leaning towards the school, I think they definitely understood. But my dad, he was probably a little bummed out. But I mean, yeah, he's been great to me my whole life, and I owe a lot of credit to him. So I mean, yeah, it was definitely a little weird, but it was something special following their footsteps.
Yeah, how much of an influence has he had on you? You know, how much has that relationship meant to you developing as a hockey player?
Yeah, I mean, it's meant everything to me. He's always been a coach ever since I was born. So it was always so easy to get access to ice. He'd let me and my brother skip school sometimes just to come skate at the rink all day. And, but yeah, as I grew up and got older, he would rewatch my games, or he'd just try to help me in whatever way he could. So I mean, I owe a lot of credit to him for sure. So I mean, yeah, I'm so grateful for him, and I'm happy that he's in my life for sure.
So fans a lot of times want to know, like, what are your favorite, you know, hockey influences and things like that. You're a Rhode Island guy, so did you grow up a Bruins fan, or do you have a favorite team?
Yeah, I'm definitely a Bruins fan. My mom's work actually had season tickets to all the Boston teams, so we always made sure that we would go to a couple Bruins games a year growing up. So they were my favorite team growing up, but now I support the Rangers. So yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to fly in New York. New Yorkers don't like Boston teams.
I know.
So, I mean, at least it's probably not quite as intense as like Yankees Red Sox, but yeah. I don't think Rangers fans like the Bruins very much. So, and they're getting ready to play them 8 times this year. So that'll be interesting.
I know. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Favorite player, even like growing up, did you have a guy that you looked up to and maybe modeled your game after, or just a guy that you really like watching?
Yeah. For me, growing up, it was definitely Sidney Crosby. Ever since I was a little kid, I always had his jerseys, his shirts. So I was in love with the Penguins just because he was on that team. And he's always someone that I've been watching my whole life. But as I started to kind of create an identity for myself, I started watching like Brad Marchand, Brendan Gallagher, those two guys I've been trying to kind of imitate my game after. So I think those three guys are definitely people that I've been watching. And I think my favorite player would probably be Crosby. And then the two guys I would kind of imitate my game after would be Marchand and Brendan Gallagher.
You are not winning yourself any brownie points at the Rangers. Crosby just scored an OT winner against them the other night.
I know.
All right. Do you have, I'm sure we kind of just talked about it. I'm sure the gold medal thing is one of your top hockey moments, but even before then, whether it's watching, playing, do you have like a favorite hockey memory?
Oof. I think I have to go with, ooh, that's hard. Maybe probably playing in the Brick Tournament in Edmonton when I was 10 years old. You don't see too many hockey rinks in the middle of malls. So that was definitely a cool experience for me. And it was in Edmonton. My grandpa and grandmother came too. So that was a pretty cool experience with them. And that was a really cool experience that I had playing in the Brick Tournament.
Winning World Juniors probably ranks above that though.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, I would think so. All right. So anybody who listens to the podcast knows I'm a big food guy, and New York has, I don't know if you, have you been in New York?
I've been once when I was really young, but I haven't been in a while now.
Well, we'll have to hook you up with some restaurant recommendations and deli recommendations when you come, but I'm a big food guy. So do you have a favorite food? Like what's your go-to comfort food or go-to meal, game day, off day, whatever?
I'm a big seafood guy. My favorite food would have to be lobster. I could have lobster any meal of the day, any day. I'm a big lobster guy. So whenever we usually have it on Christmas and New Year's, my mom usually gets me a couple lobsters. So those are definitely some pretty cool days. But that would definitely be my favorite food.
You're a New England guy through and through.
Yes, correct.
So what kind of stuff do you like to do besides hockey? Are you just like a hockey junkie all the time, or do you have other hobbies and kind of spare time activities?
Yeah, I think a big thing for me these past maybe 5 years, I've been a big golfer. So whenever it's not hockey, I've been golfing a ton. We recently joined a country club here in Rhode Island. So back in my hometown in East Greenwich. So we've been every day in the summer. You can find me, my brother, and my dad there. We always golf every day after workout and after our summer skates. We go right to the course. So it's definitely something that definitely a hobby of mine that I think is really fun.
Are you a ringer? Are you a good player?
I think I'm getting better. Yeah, I think I'm a good player. It's me and my brother are only 18 months apart. So you say there's some battles on the course that don't end up too well, but it's fun having him by my side. We always compete with each other. So, he's good. And I think I'm getting better.
Cool. Very cool. I think a lot of hockey guys like golf because it works out perfect. Off season, yeah. Summertime, weather's nice. You can get outside. All right, Brett. Well, I appreciate it. I know you got practice. So I'll let you go. Thank you so much for coming on. I think the Rangers fans are really going to like hearing from you. And let's stay in touch. Hopefully we'll get a chance to, you know, one day down the line after COVID, meet in person.
Yeah, awesome. That'd be perfect. Thank you for having me on this. So that means a lot.
All right. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Brett. Kid's got a little personality to go along with a little bit of game. And, you know, like I said, I had noticed that people were getting pretty excited about him during the World Juniors. So I had it in the back of my mind that even though I had bothered him and spoke with him, it's right before the World Juniors, I think it was early December, that I wanted to circle back and talk with him about that experience and give everybody a chance to get to know him a little bit. So big thank you to Brett for that. And now we will move on to the final segment of this program, which, of course, is your Twitter questions. And I told you guys these were going to focus on hockey. There is one question that involves Tony DeAngelo, but it's a hockey question. So we'll go there and we'll start with that one, which comes from Nick Birdie, who asks, are the Rangers thinking about bringing Nils Lundqvist over now that Tony is gone? The answer is, I think as soon as Nils is ready to sign, the Rangers would like to make that happen. But my understanding is that he will finish the SHL season. I actually spoke to Nils before the season started. It was during the pandemic, I think maybe spring or early summer, to do a feature story on him when I was doing my prospect rankings. And you could just tell from talking to him that he was really disappointed that his Swedish league team did not get a chance to finish out the season. They were one of the best teams in the league. He felt like they had a chance at winning a championship. He really wanted to take another shot at that. I believe that that, along with probably feeling like he needed just a little bit more seasoning before making the transition to the NHL, was his main motivation for staying there. I absolutely believe that every intention is to see that season through, and that's what I've heard from the Rangers as well. So once that season ends, I think the Rangers will look into signing him to that entry-level contract. I absolutely believe that it is their goal to have him in training camp for the 21-22 season, so by next fall. But as for him coming over now, I think if we're going to see that from any prospect, Vitali Kratsov is more likely. I wrote about that last week after I spoke to Chris Drury, and Jeff Gorton has said it as well, that Kratsov is, the plan is at least for him to come over after the KHL season is over and join the Rangers at that point. With Lundqvist, I'm not sure if that is necessarily the plan. I think if the Rangers got into a spot where they felt like they were really desperate and he was willing to do it, if he expressed that he was up for it, then they absolutely would consider it. But for the time being, I don't think they're banking on that. I do know, and I think somebody else asked this question, it was one of the other questions that popped up in the Twitter feed about how they'll replace DeAngelo immediately. And we got our answer for that today at practice. Libor Hájek will be stepping into the lineup. That's kind of out of necessity because there are other options. They started the year with 9 defensemen between the active roster and the taxi squad. Now DeAngelo's gone. Jack Johnson's out with a groin injury. Brandon Smith took that big hit, or he actually initiated the hit, but he seemed to take the brunt of it in that game against the Penguins the other night. He's out with an upper body injury. So the Rangers went from 9 to 6. Hájek is the 6th. He will be the 9th defenseman that the Rangers have used so far this season. And I'm very curious to see how he does, because this is a guy that the Rangers had high hopes for. We all know that. They liked what they saw when he debuted during the 18-19 season. He only played, I think, 5 games, but they liked what they saw enough that they gave him a spot on the opening night roster to begin the 19-20 season. And then we saw what happened. Not only did Hájek deal with a knee injury that kept him out for a while, and then Ryan Lindgren outplayed him, so he basically lost his spot in the lineup. But Hájek also didn't really perform very well himself, and he ended up finishing the season with Hartford. And then kind of a head-scratcher coming into the year when you've got guys like Johnson and Smith who aren't playing very well. The Rangers weren't very quick to go to him, even though this is a prospect that presumably they're high on. Now, I asked David Quinn about this today with Hájek. Again, he touts the potential. He's got the size. He's got the mobility. He's got all the physical tools you want to see, is what Quinn told me, which he's repeated several times every time I ask him about this. But his main point was he thinks it's the mental hurdle that Hájek has to go over. He thinks he suffers from a crisis of confidence at certain points. And when I asked Hájek the question, he said the same thing. He said feeling comfortable, being confident in himself is what he thinks is the biggest hurdle that he needs to clear to become an effective NHL player. Whether it's only a matter of confidence or whether there's more to it, it's kind of hard to say at this point. He's still only 22 years old, but we will see him step into the lineup. He'll be on the bottom pair with Anthony Boteto. So you've kind of got this pair that you didn't really anticipate at the beginning of the season, and now that's what the Rangers will roll with. But that's the immediate solution. You know, they're going to look for somebody between Hájek, Boteto, eventually Smith or Johnson when they get back. Out of those four, the Rangers' immediate options are that 2 of them need to grab a hold of that bottom pair role with DeAngelo gone. It's a tall order. I think they're going to play sheltered minutes. I think you're going to see the top 4 of Trouba, Miller, Lindgren, and Fox play heavy minutes, which is what we saw the other night. Trouba and Fox were both over 26 minutes in that game against the Penguins the other night, which is a pretty high, pretty wild number. But that's the immediate way they'll go about it, and then we'll see about Lundqvist. But I would think the target date for him is having him into training camp for that 21-22 season. And with D'Angelo gone, that looks like his spot to lose as far as a right-handed defenseman goes, because you have Fox and Trouba, and then you have an opening. So with that, let's get to our next question, which comes from Rob Zamparelli, who asks, why is Quinn doing this goalie nonsense? Besides the Islanders game, Georgiev has been bad and Igor has played two strong games. Igor has to start against the Caps. Well, Rob, I have some very good news for you, and that is that Igor will start against the Capitals on Thursday night. I asked David Quinn about that today, and the way that I phrased the question was, because many of you will remember that less than a week ago, Quinn told us that his temporary plan with the goalies was to alternate starts. Every other game, it would be a different guy. They've only done that for two games so far, but Igor did play, I think, his best game of the season against the Penguins on Monday. So I said to Quinn, are you planning on sticking with the alternating plan, or did what you saw from Igor the other night convince you to give him two starts in a row? He said yes, he's going to go with Igor. He said it's for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons he pointed out was that Georgiev has had, obviously, a tough week. He's been at the center of a lot of attention. He was involved in that fight with D'Angelo. So Quinn said that that was one of the reasons that he wanted to maybe give him a little more time to collect himself and, you know, feel back to normal, I guess you would say. And on the other hand, he did note that Shesterkin has played well and that he wanted to give him another shot. And here's the final thing I'll say on this. So obviously we're going to see Igor start two games in a row. If Igor plays well again and wins on Thursday night, Quinn will keep riding him. If there's anything that I've learned, this is one of the things that I've learned about Quinn in my time covering him, is when it comes to goalies, he'll openly admit he's not a goalie expert. Benny Allaire handles the goalies, and Quinn is happy to have it that way. But when it comes to deciding who he's going to start, Quinn is not afraid to ride the hot hand. We saw it last year when Igor came up. Igor got hot. Igor got the majority of the starts. He would have gotten even more starts if he didn't get injured in that car accident with Booch. And even, you know, we've seen it previously too. When Lundqvist has been hot, he's ridden him. When Georgiev got hot, he wasn't afraid to sit Lundqvist. So I know a lot of you want Igor to take the number one job. Obviously, that's what we all anticipate in the long run. But I also know that the Rangers internally like Georgiev a lot. They feel like he's a starting caliber goalie. They don't feel like he has quite the upside that Igor has. And I know that that's why there's a valid argument to be made that the Rangers should give Igor every chance to get into a rhythm. And I actually tried to ask Igor that question the other night. You know, we don't get to talk to Igor that often. His English is okay, but he prefers to go through a translator, and now we're doing the Zooms and all that. And after the game the other night, there was a translator there to interpret for Igor. And I asked him, Igor, do you like this plan of every other game? Does that help you feel comfortable knowing exactly when you're going to start? Or would you rather have the opportunity to play multiple games in a row? Would that help you get in a better rhythm? And of course, tech issues cut in right after I asked my question, as Igor was responding in Russian and I never got to hear the answer. So I don't know what his preference is, but I have a feeling he would probably rather start multiple games in a row. And now that's what he's going to do. And like I said, to me, if he gets hot, if he keeps winning games, I think Quinn will ride him. I don't think that this needs to be something that gets people up in arms, that he's going to stick with this every other goalie plan for the rest of the season. I think he's just waiting for somebody to get hot. So that's where it is on that, and we will see Igor on Thursday night against the Caps. All right, and our final question comes from Duncan Fairweather, who asks, what is the root cause of this team's inability to play 60 minutes? Duncan, that is a great question. If I knew the answer, I might be able to coach the team myself. I'm just kidding, obviously. But, you know, this is something that we've asked Quinn about repeatedly, because the Rangers had that stretch where they blew third period leads in 4 out of 5 games. So it became this very hot topic. I think the players and Quinn got a little annoyed with it. It wasn't the kind of thing that they wanted to hear all the time, but understandably so when you're showing that kind of a trend. Quinn has stressed that he feels like this team has the tendency to, especially when they have a lead, you know, he wants them to learn how to nurse a lead, learn how to grind teams down, learn how to defend in those situations, learn how to get the puck out of your own zone effectively. The Rangers have the tendency to, they call it east-west all the time. Instead of going north and just focusing on getting the puck into the other team's zone, they get a little too fancy, a little too finesse, and it ends up causing turnovers. Case in point, the first game at the Garden against Pittsburgh, the one on Saturday night before the fight, the Rangers ended up with 19 giveaways in that game. Way too many turnovers. And Quinn really harped after the game that they need to get that out of their system. And in some ways, I think that it benefited them on Monday night that it was a tie game going into the third period as opposed to them having the lead. Because in a tie game situation, they were forced to kind of keep their foot on the gas pedal. They were forced to continue to try to find ways to score because they needed to find ways to score to win the game. And they played an excellent third period, one of their best third periods of the season in that game on Monday night. And they end up getting a much needed win there. So, I mean, that's one thing that Quinn has mentioned quite a few times. Obviously, this is a very young team. This is a team that's still learning how to win, still learning how to play together in a lot of ways, still learning how to close games out. So I think that that is an obvious factor as well. The defense in general, we've talked about this quite a few times, the defense in general has been better. If you look at the Rangers' shots against, scoring chances against, they're way down from last season. So that's an encouraging sign. But clearly what the Rangers need to figure out in these third period situations is how to manage the puck better, how to keep the team from these long possessions in the Rangers zone, kind of keep some pressure on them. Don't take crazy chances. I think Adam Fox the other night said, we want to play smart, but not passive. And that's probably the right answer right there. I think Fox is a Harvard guy, so he can put it better than me. Smart, but not passive is how Fox said it the other night. And I think that might be a key for the Rangers when they end up in those situations with third period leads. Listen, the season has been largely disappointing so far from a wins and losses standpoint. Here we are. I'm recording this on Wednesday night. The Rangers are 3-4-2. So that is not an ideal record. They're in last place in the division right now. You're not going to sugarcoat that. But at the same time, there have been some encouraging signs when you talk about the defense, when you talk about reducing scoring chances against and that sort of thing. You have to feel like some of these talented offensive players that they have are going to wake up. We're kind of seeing that from Panarin right now. He's kind of sneakily up to 12 points in 9 games. And if the Rangers can string it together, they can make this interesting. I still think it's a long shot for them to make the playoffs. I told you guys that at the beginning of the season. But I still think that they can make this interesting. They've collected in their last 3 games, they had an opportunity to get 6 points and they've collected 5 of them. So things are looking a little bit better. The schedule is going to be really tough coming up. You got Caps. The game against the Devils on Saturday has been postponed because the Devils had a COVID outbreak. But you've got Caps, Islanders, then some games against the Bruins, so it doesn't get any easier. The wins are going to be very hard to come by. They're going to need to figure out how to win these close games. But you feel a lot better about things if you're a Rangers fan after what happened Monday night than you did before that when the team was reeling, the D'Angelo stuff was all over the news, and it just seemed like this team was spiraling to a bad place. That win on Monday, I can't emphasize it enough, was huge. So with that, we are going to end it. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. This was a jam-packed episode. We had all the D'Angelo stuff to talk about. I feel like I missed stuff, even though I probably went for like 25 minutes in that opening segment. I really hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Brett Berard. Brett was a great guest. Hopefully we'll have him on again in the future. But in the meantime, I'm going to call it a night, get some dinner together. I hope you guys have a good night. I hope you have a good rest of the week. And I will talk to you next week.